Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our continued coverage of NAPQ's annual conference, aptly named Engage.
Yes.
I like, because everyone over here is very engaged in conversation, yep, brainstorming, all sorts of great stuff. And in the studio lounge, we have NAPQ's very own Greg Misak.
Greg, good morning. How are you, sir? I am fantastic.
Good, good. How's the conference going for you so far?
I tell you what, it has been fantastic.
Good,
it has
good.
Been really good. We had really great opening reception last night. Our first couple speakers, I don't know if you probably didn't have a chance to watch, Dan's speech was absolutely out of the park.
I saw his. Yep.
And then the speaker after him was truly fantastic.
And that's
really
the one I missed.
He was great. Well, I think we have a video somewhere, okay, and you should watch it.
Okay.
You know, sometimes on these conferences, you get these speakers, you never know. This guy hit it out of the park.
Oh, good.
Absolutely hit it out of the park.
Good. Well, they're keeping the audience engaged.
Exactly.
So to speak.
And, you know, he was talking about how do you engage with your members, what he's talking about.
Right.
Creating those touch moments that really are meaningful and impactful. And he just, the way he wove in some personal stories with some magic tricks, it was just a lot of
fun.
That's
what I heard. He was like a professional magician.
Yeah.
But a very entertaining speaker as well.
Yes.
And getting the point across to credit unions. So, yeah,
yep,
good stuff. So what do you want to achieve here? Because we're talking advocacy policies today with you. But
yep,
other than that, what do you want to achieve here?
I think my job here, what I want to achieve is try to engage with our members, connect with our members. You know, one of the real value propositions that NAPQ provides for our members is that advocacy. It's one of, you know, you heard Dan talk about it. It truly is one of our cores. Advocacy, compliance, education. Well, advocacy and compliance are two of the things that I'm responsible for. So try to connect with our members and just show the value proposition of what NAPQ is doing for them. How we're out there every day working for them. Defense, offense, trying to make their lives better. Trying to make it so that they can, you know, reach out to more people. Bring more people into the credit union ecosystem. Bring more people into the credit union world and help everyday Americans, help Main Street America, and explain to them what we're doing, but also how they can help us, because advocacy is a two-way street.
Yeah.
You know, us on Capitol Hill, us with the regulators, we can, you know, give that message. But when those individual credit unions engage, when they talk to their members of Congress, when they share with us their stories, or just, you know, answer our survey so we have the data, it gives us so much more ability to actually effectively communicate that message.
Mm-hmm.
It really empowers us when they engage with us and give us their stories, give us the data, give us the ammunition we need to make that case for them.
No doubt.
And so it's, you know, trying to explain how let them know what we're doing for them. Let them know that, you know, when they entrust us with their membership dues, it actually provides a tangible benefit, but also how that we need them to engage to give us more. How that when they are a part of the process, when it's the whole group working together, it's really powerful.
Yeah, no doubt. And Dan mentioned on stage, or kind of at the closing end of his commentary, about NAPQ Nation.
Yeah.
And talk about advocacy. So share with me a little bit about NAPQ Nation and then how that helps advocate credit unions.
Oh,
so not only the folks in the Beltway, but nationwide as well.
It is so critical. I think, you know, what it does, NAPQ Nation gives us something besides talking points in Capitol Hill, besides, you know, one-page documents. It gives those personal stories. It gives those concrete, real-life examples. Because when we talk about the credit union difference, I don't think that people have to appreciate it. A lot of people view, you know, credit unions as like banks by a different name. But there's more. The credit unions are something different. And we have those tangible examples. You saw the video he played up there. We have so many stories like that where you have a group that is actually not just a bank, but it's a community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a credit union community, and that community cares for itself and helps its members. To actually have tangible, real-life examples of that, we can go to a lawmaker, we can go to a regulator, or we can go to a newspaper, we can go to a news outlet and share those stories and put a face on that. And really give, you know, have a way for the credit union difference to hit home and actually make it tangible, make it something you can see and appreciate.
Well, that brings a reality. It brings it to a reality, and that's what gets through to the representatives on Capitol Hill, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Those stories
because, look, a representative of Capitol Hill, it's not a criticism, they're inundated. They're hearing from all sides.
I can't imagine.
I mean, literally, I feel sorry for them. I worked on Capitol Hill. Can you imagine waking up and having your day scheduled in 15-minute increments from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.? And so, you know, a credit union lobbyist will come in, and we do. We go into every single office, talk to every member of Congress, and we sit down and talk with them. That's one thing. And you know, that makes a difference. But when they can see a story of someone, a credit union in their district or in their state, helping their members, going above and beyond, show what that not-for-profit cooperative really means. That makes it connect. That's something they'll remember and something that makes a difference.
Completely. And so what are you talking to people about here as far as advocacy efforts? What are you talking to folks here in the hallways?
Well, you know, there's a couple different things. On Capitol Hill, we're talking to them about the need to keep on fighting on interchange. I can probably talk to my colleague Brad about that a little bit later. And we're talking a lot about trying to make sure that credit unions can grow. So it's the field of membership reforms on Capitol Hill. So that's a big thing, trying to make sure that credit unions can go out and continue to bring those services to more and more people. You know, Dan touched on this, but there's 1,500 bank branch closures, over 10,000 in the past decade. Credit unions are adding branches, but there's obstacles. So we're trying to fix those obstacles. And then some real quality of life, credit union charter improvements, things like business lending, investment authority. Some of the things that just, little things that, you know, singles and doubles win baseball games more than home runs. So we're trying to get some of those singles and doubles. And then on the regulatory side, we have some big battles we're going to be fighting. The CFPB is continuing its, what they call junk fees. We call it a war on non-interest income. And that non-interest income, the great thing is at NAFCU, we have a great economic research team. When you start taking away those streams of income from credit unions, it takes away their ability to serve their members. You know, there's a great study that came out after the Durbin Amendment passed. The debit interchange caps. They found the single greatest cause of the loss of free checking accounts was the Durbin credit. Durbin interchange cap.
Oh my gosh.
It was right up there. So because you think about it, that's fee income, and if the credit union doesn't have that interchange income, you know, they're going to make
it. It's there for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it pays for a service.
Exactly. That's
what we're trying to say. So the CFPB with their NSF and overdraft rules, they're going to finish up their credit card late fee rule. Who knows what else they're going to be thinking up. They have some other regulations coming down, the open banking rulemaking, which if done right could be really powerful for credit unions. Yeah. If done wrong could be devastating for credit unions. So trying to help make sure they get that right. So we're talking to them a lot about that. And then, you know, the interestingly, one of the really fascinating things that we're watching, it's a hard discussion to have because no one's turn out, but the Supreme Court's going to hear a case on the constitutionality of the CFPB in the fall.
Interesting.
And so we're all kind of, everyone's, you never know what the Supreme Court's going to decide, but we're all kind of speculating and pontificating on that.
Oh my gosh, pins and needles. For sure. Well, weren't they going to, like, take it from, like, one person heading the CFPB to maybe a conglomerate, like,
a commission?
Three or four or five people?
We've talked about that. NAFCU has strongly supported a commission structure, but this case is different. This is just the way, when CFPB was created, they have the most unique funding structure in all of government. Whereas the NCUA sets a budget and they assess fees. The credit unions pay in. The FDIC is similar. They set an operating budget, they collect fees. The SEC has user fees. The CFPB doesn't do that. The Fed makes income and the CFPB just goes to the Fed and says, I need this much, give it to me. So it's this weird thing where they don't even have to, they don't have to set a budget, no one approves it, they just go to the Fed and say,
we need this much, give it to me.
I need $200 million, hand it over.
Sounds
and
like my 12-year-old kid.
I know, it's my kid every time he wants to go to McDonald's, you know? And so the Fifth Circuit said, well, there's no accountability in that. You know, there's no accountability, there's no transparency, that's unconstitutional. Now it's a double-edged sword because NCUA and all the other bank regulators are also not appropriated, like the CFPB isn't. Our structure is different than theirs, so we're hoping the Supreme Court can walk that line and say, well, the NCUA is transparent. They have a budget hearing every year. They publish the budget. It's open for comment. NAFCU comments on it. The SEC does as well, the FDIC. So we'll be interested to see if they can walk that line and say that, as all these agents are, it's fine, but the CFPB, because it's this two steps removed instead of one step removed. Yeah. So it's a really fun case.
Very interesting. Second half of the year, indeed, sir.
Exactly. Well, we might not hear on that one until, which complicates the rulemaking. So all these CFPB rules are coming down the pike. And I think they might try to get them done before the Supreme Court rules. So.
What a polarizing organization that is.
It is, but it's, you know.
Just.
Yeah.
It is what it is, as they say. So anything else? I mean, I know we could probably talk here another 3 hours on policy and all that type of stuff, because I know this is what you're passionate about. But anything else to add to kind of wrap this one up? Because I know you got lots of folks to talk to in that other room over there. But
no, I think we're in for a very exciting end of the year. Just other advocacy things. You can talk to my guy Brad about it. We have defense authorization moving down the pike. So as the interchange battles loom, and you know, there's basically three bills that are going to get signed into law this year: the appropriations bill, NDAA, and maybe a farm bill. Mm-hmm. And so, as you've probably seen over the past couple of years, when Congress doesn't pass much legislation, the few that do pass become Christmas trees. So we're just trying to keep an eye on those to make sure that Mr. Durbin doesn't. And then, you know, we're in a fascinating time budget-wise, because Congress is trying to actually show a little bit of fiscal restraint. It's not something they do very often. And so, you know, when the people start looking around and they have to start paying for things, we always get a little nervous. And so we're watching very closely the tax exemption that credit unions enjoy, because they're not-for-profit cooperatives. So as they work on, you know, they got to shake the couch to get any loose change out of it, that we're not part of that. So that's always something we'll keep an eye on.
Oh, gosh, every year that comes up. Every single year.
And a couple of previous years, they didn't do too much, show too much restraint. This year it's back around. Yeah. So, and what's really fascinating, in 2025, this is down the road, the big 2017 tax bill expires, and so we're going to have a lot of interesting discussions.
Oh my God. What year is that, 2025?
Yeah, so it's really not that far away, you think about it. So the 2024 election is going to have a little extra meaning.
Yeah, you're right about that stuff. All right, Greg, well, I'm going to let you get back at it. Thank you so much for
your
a few minutes. I know you're a busy, busy guy, but thanks for hanging out with us on the couch for
a
little bit.
Absolute pleasure. Anytime. Happy to come back.
All right, Greg.
Quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible.